Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Monday morning. It is the 2nd of April. We've started a new month. Very nice to have you all with us. Just coming into the theme of Doogie Howser, M.D., we're going to hear some Stephen Bochco themes this morning. Yeah. Stephen Bochco, the great Emmy-winning producer, died over the weekend at the age of 74. Doogie Howser.
A young man.
Doogie Howser.
NYPD Blue.
NYPD Blue. Hill Street Blues. Cop Rock. Good stuff.
The first three, yes. Cop Rock.
no, don't. And
of
course,
didn't make it too long.
Oh, no. L.A. Law, NYPD Blue. The list is really incredible. Yeah. So we'll be playing that this morning. But good morning, everybody. Welcome. Hope you had a beautiful weekend and enjoyed your time together and got to spend some time with family and friends, of whether it was Easter or Passover or whatever it is you were celebrating. It was it was a lovely weekend weather-wise, so hopefully you enjoyed it. And then today, I don't know what the hell happened, but that's all right. Libby Post is here. She is a political consultant and joins us this morning. Thank you very much. Very nice to be with you.
Nice to be here.
And Teresa Bourgeois is here. She is a communications consultant. And good morning, Teresa.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you with us.
Love being here. Thank you for having me.
And Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir.
Hey.
How are you?
Well, I'm fine. We went to a Seder up at the Dreamway Lodge, Danny Osmond, on Saturday night. A guy sat opposite us, and he didn't like my take on what should happen with the Berkshire Museum art.
Ah.
So
didn't the power of the Seder overtake the...
You would have hoped so. Dot, dot, dot.
Mm-hmm. Hey, today's Dingus Day. Happy Dingus Day in Buffalo.
What's a dingus? What is a dingus?
It's the Dingus Day in Buffalo. I don't even know. Somebody from Buffalo can tell us. It's a big celebration. It's like Mardi Gras for Buffalo.
Okay. I have to look that up.
Would say, okay.
It's a big deal.
Okay. But you can't even tell us what it is.
Well, somebody listening from Buffalo can tell us. When I used to live out in Rochester.
Oh, it's the Polish holiday after Easter, Dingus Day, D-Y-N-G-U-S.
Right. It's a big deal.
Okay. And there is an article in the Buffalo News called A Newbie's Guide to Dingus Day. So there you go. If you need help, just call that up.
The biggest Dingus Day celebration in America.
There you go.
okay.
Let's get started.
Joe's going to give me a look and say, don't you dare. Go ahead.
Oh, I know where you're headed. Right. Okay.
I agree with you, but I agree with him.
Here we go. The DACA deal. The president spoke out this weekend on this Easter weekend, venting on immigration. Donald Trump vows no more DACA deal and threatens NAFTA. This was in lieu of a Easter message. President Trump blaming Democrats from the Mexican government for an increasingly dangerous flow of illegal immigrants unleashed a series of fiery tweets on Sunday morning in which he vowed no more DACA deal and threatened to walk away from the North American Free Trade Agreement. Minutes after wishing the nation a happy Easter Sunday, Mr. Trump denounced liberal laws and he said were preventing Border Patrol agents from doing their jobs. He said the Republicans should use the nuclear option to sidestep Democratic opposition in the Senate to enact tough laws now.
First of all, I want to go back to Dingus Day and say I just want everybody to know that I have nothing against that holiday. I think it's a great holiday. It was something else that just sort of hit my mind. Secondly, I want to go hold your letters. So on top of that, I want to go back to this incredible chutzpah-laden, idea of Trump to say it was the Democrats' fault. Mm-hmm. Let's remember that he said he was for it. Bring me a bill and I'll sign it. So the Democrats and the Republicans got together and they brought him a bill, and he wouldn't deal with it. So he's full of hot air. And all I got to say is the idea, the gall, the unspeakable gall to blame his nonsense on the Democrats because they, and what did they do? They didn't give him all the money for the wall that he wanted, and they didn't give him, the rest of that stuff. So it's terrible. This guy is beyond terrible.
This is a man who doesn't know what the word responsibility means. It really just comes down to that. Everybody else is to blame for everything. He takes no responsibility for anything. And, you know, he listens to Fox and Friends. I mean, they are, you know, what we read this morning was really clear. He listens to Fox and Friends, and then he goes on a, and he uses that as the basis for his policy. And then he goes on a Twitter rant.
And then he appoints them to a political office.
Right. And then they've got to, then the White House has to spend all day backtracking, you know, and covering the tracks and trying to make some rational sense out of what he's tweeted, which is totally impossible. So it's no wonder our government is just in total disarray.
Teresa?
It occurred to me, I stayed off Twitter and didn't watch a lot of news for a couple of days, you know, Friday, Saturday until last evening, and I've got a break from all of it. And it occurred to me as I was reading all of this last night that there's going to come a time, either because of something he did or just what's happening in the world, that something bad happens. God forbid, a 9/11 type thing or some other catastrophe here around the world. And at that time, it will matter that people believe what the President of the United mm-hmm. States says. And so beyond the, you know, day-to-day policy and confusion this causes, you know, for every policy, whether it's DACA or U.S.-Mexico relations, trade, U.S.-China relations, beyond the specifics of those, this is creating a much bigger problem when the people, leaders around the world can't believe what the president says, and, you know, policymakers here have to work around this. So I'm not sure what one does about it, but the things that he tweeted about this week are just so incredible in this it's not credible. They're not believable.
Yet very consequential.
Yet very, very consequential, both in the specific policy about these, you know, these DACA kids, they're real people with real lives. And there are businesses that depend on the work that they're going to do. He created this problem. He had an opportunity, a bipartisan opportunity was presented to him to solve this problem, and he didn't do it. And now for reasons one, you know, for distraction or whatever, he's doing this, and it's irresponsible at
best.
But
is he distracting when he says that you give me a bill and I'll sign it, or is he distracting when he says DACA is done? I mean, he said all of these things. So I guess at what point do you believe what he says?
That's the problem. How can you negotiate? It's a, you know, a good jellyfish or something, you know, whatever. I can't think of the right analogy, but how can you
negotiate? I believe you're looking for some sort of spineless creature.
Yes. How can you negotiate in this situation? Whether you're Senator McConnell and Senator Ryan, whether you're the Democrats, Congressman Ryan. How do you do that? And you see what's happening. I think the Chinese leadership is running circles around us. Our power is diminishing in Europe because they're moving on in terms of trade negotiations without us. This idea of go-it-alone trade negotiations. This is a problem.
So I think what happened, I think following up on your question, your assertions, is that he walked by the cage and he said, better throw them a piece of red meat. He threw them a piece of red meat.
I think Libby, he watched a little bit of Fox News, something he saw on it, piqued his interest. I don't think he understands the substance of a lot of these issues, and he just tweets something out.
Doesn't care.
No.
Because he's winning the news cycle day to day. But this all, he's trying to win the day to day news cycle.
So what about NAFTA? And because you were touching on this, but what does this have to do with China and with these, with the roller coaster stock market that we've seen?
Well, Joe, he's decided that Mexico is the enemy and that anything he can do to Mexico, he's going to do. So he makes up this thing about mm-hmm. this, you know, about these people who are convoying up to get into the United States. Yeah, it's not a good thing. But on the other hand, you know, it's not a majority of the people who were here and who really deserve to be taken care of at this stage. So it's not good. But NAFTA is just another way that he can poke the Mexicans in the eye.
And to your point, Alan, he just tweeted out about 10 minutes ago, Mexico is making a fortune on NAFTA. They have very strong border laws. Ours are pathetic. With all of the money they make from the U.S., hopefully they will stop people from coming through their country and into ours, at least until Congress changes our immigration laws. Now, of course,
how can they have very strong laws if, in fact, he's also tweeting that everybody's coming in there, mm-hmm. getting ready to come here?
Right. Well, it's internally incoherent because, as you say, the first says they have strong border walls, and the second says that everybody's coming here. So,
I think internally incoherent is a wonderful way to describe him and the presidency all at once, right. besides all of his tweets.
So I listened to Andrew Young. There's a lot of wonderful programming this week in honor of the 50th anniversary of Martin Luther King's being killed. And Andrew Young was talking about this era in the context of, he said he remembered during Nixon's time, there was great concern about the strength of our democracy and whether or not it would survive. And then he said a year later, the democracy was in the hands of Gerald Ford, and this system had righted itself, and that we just have to believe in the strength and resilience and work for the strength and the resilience of our democracy. So that was a little comfort in that.
He's a wonderful man.
He is.
I was in New Orleans for a conference years and years ago, and it's a very famous breakfast place called Mother's. I don't know if any of you have been there. And, I went in with some people, and I sat down next to this guy, and it was him. Amazing. I just want you to know that.
He is terrific. He's wonderful.
And really apropos wonderful. Of nothing, Congressman John Lewis is just the absolute hero of the country.
Without question.
He is just amazing.
Unbelievable. Man with guts.
So where do you think this goes from here? Do you see any Republicans speaking out? Do you see any Democrats speaking out? Do you see anybody responding to what the president has tweeted to actually get something done? I'll take that as a no.
Well, I think for the Democrats, the best thing is to, right now, keep it within the courts. I think that hold the ball is the best strategy for them until the election, right, if possible.
Very good point.
Because the safest thing for the DACA recipients, the safest thing for them right now is the protections that the court is affording them.
The judges have put a hold.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so... I would guess that they have a hold the ball strategy and see what happens in the elections. And if their hands are forced, there was the compromise that the president wouldn't sign. I don't think that they can get his policies through. Anything he proposes, because of the people he's now surrounded himself in the White House, there's no
a few people.
There's no moderating.
Right.
Right.
There's
no moderating
morning,
forces.
The only sort of moderate left is Mattis, which is a joke in itself. Right. You know, that he's one of the few that know what he's doing besides maybe Kelly.
And or even moderating,
yeah,
too.
Right,
both.
Right. Both. Moderating both. Yeah. Right. I mean, it's just he's going to end up, it's going to be like the Celebrity Apprentice in the White House.
Right. And you have this China news this morning. I don't know if you were going to add that. I don't know.
The Chinese government has hit back on tariffs on steel and aluminum by acting on a threat to put tariffs as high as 25% on imports of 128 American-made products, including pork and seamless steel pipes, just to name two of the 128.
And for New York, apples, big issue for New York. And a lot of big hit on California, which is interesting because Trump probably doesn't care so much about that.
New York. Where have I heard that before?
Right.
Well,
mm-hmm.
and we'll go into the and not brouhaha on, that he had
right.
with Governor Brown.
And not on soybeans, though.
Although an important, interesting thing this morning was that China apparently has picked out some of the major states for retribution that elected Trump, some of those states.
Oh, interesting.
So that's why they have chosen particular things to put tariffs on. Hmm. And when you said, hold the ball before, I was saying, what about that Villanova?
Go Villanova.
Well, what about Notre Dame?
We watched that game.
They're terrific, aren't
that
they?
This is the women's team we're talking about.
I know
about.
What you're talking about.
It was an incredible game. And I, you know.
Go Catholics.
Well, you know, the thing is, it was Catholics, Southerners. Who am I going to vote for? Who am I going to, you know? And the fact that if Notre Dame.
Loyola had gotten in.
Yeah,
man,
I'm just upset about Loyola.
Notre Dame beat UConn. So I thought if they were good enough to beat UConn, they are good enough to root for. And they did. It was an incredible game because you started the game. They came out like 10 points ahead at the beginning of the first quarter. And then it went back and forth. And you know, Mississippi took on a good lead. And then that last shot, it was unbelievable.
Very exciting. Great game.
There's highlights on YouTube. There's a highlight at the end. I didn't get to see the whole game, but whoa. And then they played with such heart all year, though. They played with such heart.
And then there was a second left, and everyone was leaving the court. Mm-hmm. And they had to bring everybody back so that they could put the ball in play for a second, and that was that.
It was incredible.
Michigan and Villanova tonight.
Yeah.
So we'll see what happens in San Antonio. Villanova.
Why? Well, for
a couple of reasons. My best friend in the entire world, and all of his sisters actually all went to Villanova, so I have great. And it's, you know, it's from my hometown too.
Yeah, and you, Libby, who are you for?
Villanova versus Michigan.
Yeah,
Michigan.
How come?
Just because.
Because what? I mean, I can never, ever, root for a Dallas team, because you know what? Because Kennedy, so I could never do that.
Yeah.
So we all have our reasons.
Because the guys in the Big Chill.
Some big George.
No, right. We love the Big Chill.
The Big Chill. The guy Kevin Klein and all those guys from in the movie Big Chill were big University of Michigan fans. So there you go.
All right.
Okay, wait.
Well, we only have 10 seconds. So go ahead.
I don't know.
You have to have
my
it.
Team is out, so I, you know.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna take a break. When we come back, we'll be.
All right, Michigan. No, I don't know.
We'll be back after this. Playing Stephen Bochco themes, Hill Street Blues.
Yeah, be safe out there.
Be safe out there. That's
be
right.
Be safe out there. He was great. He was only on for a season because he died. Osterhaus. But he was great. Yeah. It's a great show.
Well, 74 years old, passed away over the weekend, and we'll be playing some more themes as we go on. Alan has some. You have letters? Is that right? I do.
Teresa just showed me a headline that said that Trump has now invited Vladimir Putin to visit the White House. Amazing. So who owns who?
Yeah.
Okay. Russ says, "April Fools." Hello, April. Happy April, panel. Trump has now confirmed that he was just joking about his willingness to compromise on immigration policy. Hundreds of thousands of quiet aspirants to citizenship are close to arbitrary arrest and detention. Why shouldn't immigration judges be allowed to consider length of residence in deliberations? Only a mass movement to dislodge the Trump Republican cabal can yield any reform, and that's Russ from Anans. And Pamela says, a popular spring courting end of Lent celebration in areas of Polish heritage, and that's Dingus Day, is hardly observed in Troy at Musa and the hill at Musa today. Enjoy Trojski. That's from Pamela.
I went to Musa for the first time recently.
Yeah,
it was a lovely restaurant.
Well, you took us to a nice restaurant over there. What was the name of that one?
Smith's in Cahos. Great political history at Smith's.
Yeah. Mm. It got damaged by the big fire.
But they came back
and they're doing okay. Yeah. I've been there for a number of things. Political stuff. Yeah,
and so, Michael says, Mexicans, isn't the number of Mexicans leaving higher than the ones entering the country? What is he talking about? That's Michael. We've heard that again and again. I hope that that's true, right? I mean, I don't hope that the Mexicans are going back, but I hope it's true. That you're right.
I guess the reporting on this Putin story is that during the phone call that he had with Vladimir Putin, he invited him to the White House, and I guess that's what's being released today is that a Kremlin aide told the press that the president
said,
President Trump invited him to
come
the
on
White
by.
House. So. This was the same. This was the same.
By being after the word.
This would have been the same phone call that would have included the script that said, "Don't congratulate him." So, all right, there we are on that. Other things to talk about. I do want to. Did we mention? We talked about China. Was there anything else? Anybody else wanted to go on about China and the tariffs?
Well, it'll be the thing about the tariffs that I think is most concerning is that, given that the State Department is so depleted, who's there to work on the negotiations, you know, with our trade folks on this? Because there's a very delicate dance going on between the trade negotiations and also the military negotiations with South Korea, North Korea, mm-hmm. China. And those are intertwined, and they should be negotiated in a way that's intertwined. And at the same time, we're antagonizing our allies in Europe. We're probably going to need their support in the negotiations that are going on around North Korea. And
there you go again, so, Teresa. Confusing policy and politics. Policy and politics. You're quite right, of course, about everything you're saying. Nevertheless, I don't give a damn is what Trump is obviously saying. This means nothing to me.
But it's a reminder of the danger of depleting the State Department of experts and of not filling major positions. I think we still don't have a U.S. ambassador to South Korea. I know the top four or five key positions in the Asia region in the State Department are vacant, having lost the top two experts in that region in diplomacy.
And now, Teresa, while I agree with you, certainly I agree with you about what you just said, it's important to remember that presidents over time have, in fact, eschewed using their State Department. Franklin Roosevelt was a pretty good one when it came to that.
But Franklin Roosevelt had a brain, and he understood government, and he had the ability to negotiate and get things done. This man doesn't understand any of that and thinks he's the most dangerous kind of demagogue. He thinks he knows what he's doing when he doesn't. And, you know, you cannot compare somebody like FDR with Donald Trump.
I take your point.
And also, there's the rhetoric that a president has of setting a tone. But then it gets to the work, the sort of grunt work of actually putting together the details. And those are done by the people in the State Department and the U.S. Trade Rep's Office and others. And if there aren't people, whether in Roosevelt's time or now,
right,
to do that, it really makes a difference.
And here we have China, who he's in his own little trade war with, right, and constantly griping about them, being the one to really negotiate with North Korea and leaving us, as you said, out in the cold in all of this. And then there's the trade part of it. So there's the politics, there's the trade, there's global finance.
And I don't disagree with some of this rhetoric on the need to address the U.S.-China trade issue. And certainly as it relates to
intellectual property.
But even, you know, the trade imbalance. But that has to be done delicately and with the awareness that it's happening at the same time we're having all of these other foreign
or Teresa,
issues.
Not delicately. I have no problem with this pounding the table on intellectual property or on the trade imbalance. What is awful here is that his own Republican Party, certainly, and everybody who is looking at the stock market right now, the people who he depends on the most, they're furious at him because basically they think he's ruining everything and the mm-hmm. things are moving ahead quite nicely, and they don't particularly care about the trade imbalance or about the intellectual property because things are going well. So it's interesting that his core Republican constituency is really angry at him about this.
Not to mention the fact of the hypocrisy in his own business where he, you know, as Jimmy Kimmel, you know, other people have written about, but Jimmy Kimmel demonstrated by buying a bunch of stuff from him. You know, most mm-hmm. of it is made in China, so he doesn't follow his own.
Of course not. Because he thinks he's above everything.
But the question, what does this mean for the average person at home, you know, trying to put food on the table and get to work and such? And, where will these costs trickle down to? You know, where is this leading? What's the outcome going
to
be?
What it means is for the average person, they have to work 3 to 4 jobs to be able to feed their families, pay their rent or their mortgage. That's what it means.
I would love to see a reporter go back. Remember when he signed the tariffs on aluminum and steel,
yes,
and he had all the workers around him? And now he has, and that was tons of cameras. Now with no cameras on, he signed another executive order to rescind much of that. He's cut a number of deals that rescinds mm-hmm. much of that. So you wonder what those folks who stood around him and he gave them hope, what are they thinking right now?
Well, and the words we keep on hearing is trade war. So where are we on that?
I'm in a trade war. They said that this China announcement today they made clear is just for the aluminum and steel. They haven't even responded yet to the additional tariffs that he put on just to China. And so this is only the first round. I'm no expert in trade, but I keep reading and hearing that when they move to soybeans, for whatever reason, that's a signal that this is a serious trade war if they start blocking soybeans. But and that certainly would hurt the heart of his constituency.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have much more to discuss. We will get into that in just a moment. We welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Alan Chartok, Teresa Bourgeois, and Libby Post join us this morning, and we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2-3-2- All right. Good morning. Welcome back. Hey, Brandy Newman. It's Cop Rock. Was not a very successful.
COP, right.
Yes.
Right.
It was not a very successful program, but it was a cop musical.
I think it was on for 9 episodes.
It was great. I have all that's great episodes. A very, very good show.
Here's a letter, Joe.
Yeah, go ahead.
From Fred from Fort Plain, who says, good morning. Will you please comment on the mandatory political commentaries reported on Morning Joe? And it was reported by a lot of other people besides Morning Joe. And read by Sinclair Broadcasting anchors across the nation, including WRGV's Liz Bishop. Yeah. What are the implications for First Amendment, et cetera? Thank you for your thoughtful discussion.
We'll get into that in a second, because I want to set it up, and then I want to play a little bit of it, but... if you read the other letters, then by the time we're
okay,
ready Trump, there, we'll probably be ready to go.
Whatever you say, boss. Good morning. Teresa was in error saying that there will come a time when a catastrophe will occur. Catastrophes are already, in capital letters, occurring. He's expediting climate change. Innocent people are being napalmed in Syria. Wonderful people are being exported, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Hoping in November we'll elect a Congress with a spine to reverse his destructive rampage, and that's from Mary. And James says, Dems want to wait and wait until it's too late. The silence of the lamb. So very few lions in that group. Right. From James. Does anybody get that one?
Silence of the Lambs, I got. Not much further than that. Yes.
Okay. Right. I mean, I think he's saying that the Democrats are sitting back and doing nothing, and right. I guess I don't agree with that.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. Keith says, Trump is a callous racist. Trump is a callous 71-year-old narcissistic racist who is incapable of caring for anyone but himself. He is feeding the part of his base that is similarly racist. When people say Trump is not a racist, remember that Trump is the original birther and carried on his shame for years. And that's from Keith.
I think that's a lot of this Mexico stuff is. He's certainly a verbal bully, at least.
Oh, no, he's a racist.
And I read you Frederick's letter. And then Denise says, Puerto Rico and Liberia. Politico wrote an expose of FEMA failures in aid to Puerto Rico compared to Texas. And the fate of our colony continues to die to be dire. Today is day 194 without full power. Meanwhile, another former colony, Liberia, founded to get rid of emancipated, and free blacks in the U.S. has become a Trump target with his announcement about ending TPS, temporary protected status, for approximately 4,000 Liberians who are currently here. From my perspective, Trump is pursuing Make America White Again via his deportation and exclusion policies.
Yeah.
Can't argue with that.
Nope.
George says, oh yeah, we talked about, George says, Alan, really, you would never root for a sports team from Dallas because JFK was assassinated in Dallas. You do understand that isn't a reflection on Dallas, don't you? I'm, says George, embarrassed. Well, George, the whole idea of my saying that was to make it clear that we all had crazy reasons. That's we didn't vote for teams.
That's right.
And if you couldn't hear that, I'm embarrassed about you.
All right, so on local news stations across the United States last month, dozens of anchors gave the same speech to their combined millions of viewers. It included a warning about fake news, a promise to report fairly and accurately, and a request that viewers go to the station's website and comment if you believe our coverage is unfair. It may not have seemed strange until viewers began to notice that the newscasters from Seattle to Phoenix to Washington to Albany sounded very similar. Stitched together videos on social media showed them eerily echoing the same lines. Here's a little clip from the speech that was given last month.
Our greatest responsibility is to serve our Treasure Valley communities,
the El Paso, Las Cruces communities,
Eastern Iowa communities,
Mid-Michigan communities.
We are extremely proud of the quality, balanced journalism that CBS 4 News produces.
But we are concerned about troubling trying to be responsible, one-sided news stories plaguing our country.
The sharing of biased and false news has become all too common on social media. More alarming, some media outlets publish these same fake stories without checking facts first.
The sharing of biased and
false news has become all too common on social media.
More alarming, some media
You get the idea. The script came from Sinclair Broadcast Group. Deadspin has put this all together on this video that went viral over the weekend, which is what we just played you. Last week, the Seattle Post-Intelligencer published a copy of the speech and reported that employees at a local news station there, KOMO, were unhappy about the script. CNN reported on it March 7th and said Scott Livingston, the senior vice president of news for Sinclair, had read almost the exact same speech for a segment that was distributed to outlets a year ago. A union that represents news anchors did not respond immediately to requests for comment on Sunday. Dave Tweddle, of the International Cinematographers Guild, who is a business representative for photojournalists but not anchors at KOMO in Seattle and KATU in Portland, Oregon, said Sinclair told journalists at those stations not to discuss the company with outside news media. Although it is the country's largest broadcaster, Sinclair is not a household name, and viewers may be unaware who owns their local news station. Critics have accused the company of using its stations to advance a mostly right-leaning agenda.
We work
very hard to be objective and fair and be in the middle, Mr. Livingston told the New York Times last year. I think maybe some other news organizations may be to the left of center, and we work very hard to be in the center. Mr. Trump, President Trump, responded to scrutiny of the broadcaster on Monday in a tweet. So funny to watch fake news networks, among the most dishonest groups of people I've ever dealt with, criticize Sinclair Broadcasting for being biased. Sinclair is far superior to CNN and even more fake NBC, which is a total joke. That released about 20 minutes ago. Sinclair regularly sends video segments to its stations that it owns, including WRGB right here in Albany, New York. These are referred to as must runs, and they include content like terrorism news updates, commentators speaking in support of President Trump, or speeches from company executives like the one from Mr. Livingston last year.
Well, you know, this is something that we really haven't seen exactly the same way. I know that the Hearsts, the old man Hearst, used to run
his editorials.
They used to run his column above the fold every Sunday, I believe. But then they're not doing that anymore. And because he's not here. So the idea that the Fox stations follow a similar line is all there. The thing we have to understand is that they got caught on this one. So it's not that they hire in their own image and that these people do what they're supposed to do and be right-wingers the way they're supposed to be. But in this case, they may have made a step too far and they got caught at it.
Well, certainly putting them all together was eerie. And because it sounds like everybody in lockstep saying the exact same thing, which of course is exactly what they're doing. But what they have been sending the stations has been fairly consistent for the past 2 years or so.
Right.
Well, Liz Bishop is a very good friend of mine. She has been for years. And I feel bad about this, you know, because people have families, they have to earn an income, they have to do this or that, and there comes that point when who has three kids at home in a suburb, you know, and I'm not saying Liz does, but can say, okay, the heck with this, my morality is more important than, you know, than getting it right.
But we'll work for food, right? I mean, if you're working for a station and you have an owner come in, and those of us who've worked in television, commercial television or radio, know that, you know, anytime you can walk in and see a new car in the parking lot and just assume somebody new is in town.
Yeah.
And I remember, oh, really? AT&T bought our company? Excellent. Fantastic. I have to go work on public radio. But it's interesting because, as you said, Alan, I mean, you know, what do you do? I mean, you don't really have much, especially if you've given your entire career to one station or to mm-hmm. or to a market.
It's going to be tough for some people, and some people will just have to swallow it because they have to make a living and they have their families to support, like Alan said. And honestly, there's not a lot of places to go. I mean, we've got you're not going to be able to hire everybody who leaves WRGB, right?
No.
You know, neither is Channel 13 or Channel 10 or Spectrum. And so it's going to be between a rock and a hard place. But what I think you might see is some of these long-time journalists who's pretty much had it leave and become PR people,
now,
which is what a lot of people have done.
Right. The greater evil, of course, is what's happening.
Absolutely. It's
that these
disgusting.
Guys, okay, we've concentrated a little bit on the people who read the stuff.
Right. It's really bad.
What's happening is these, look, one of the reasons I'm so sure that the AM radio stations are all failing now. Their numbers are going down. They're failing is because they all got bought by right wingers who played Rush Limbaugh and the other guys all day, and people don't want to hear it. So I think that's part of the AM crumble that we have seen.
And there, you know, there might be. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
And there may be some people there who will philosophically agree with this. So we have to, you know, so
well,
that that's possible. But
let's not forget the audience. I mean,
right,
I think if the audience turns, the audience turns away. I mean, I know
right.
I have stopped watching just because I feel, because it feels so forced. And
right.
it feels, I don't like watching it because everyone feels uncomfortable.
Yeah, well, there's that.
It seems like they're doing it in duress. And I, you know.
And some people, you would hope that they do stay to fight back in any way that they can. But the other thing, I know it's a fantasy, but you wish that you could crowdfund to buy back a station like WRGB.
That'd be great.
I mean, the history of that station, that's one of the first TV news stations.
In the world. In the country.
I know my mom worked in the newsroom there.
I worked there.
It was
a long time.
I remember.
Yeah, early television. And you just hate to see that happening because it's of its rich history. And you hope that there's some way that they can see their way through it without destroying the station.
But I think, and this is only impression, my impression, having worked there for many, many years and others, and then worked at Channel 13, was that there is a basic philosophical difference between the two places.
Yes, yes.
13 was a little, was more, I would think, independent and maybe a little bit more to the left, what, with brilliant people like Ed Daig and other people, there.
Yes, to a degree.
And then, yes. And then on the other side, Channel 6 was always a little bit more on the conservative side, the more right-wing.
No, it's true. It's true. When the gay rights stuff was going on here and it was hot and heavy, you could see the difference in the coverage between all three stations or among all three stations. What's horrible in this whole thing with Sinclair and I guess, you know, you talked about Hearst, Hearst and his column being above the fold. You know, I thought we had gotten away from that, and that people who were in journalism were people like Rex and people even like Liz Bishop who believed in freedom of the press. And now we have moved to what Ben Bagdikian had said and portended all those years ago, monopoly journalism, monopoly capital, and how it plays out in the journalistic setting, which is one message and one message only, which is, you know, one step away from the grave of fascism.
And there's always going to be differing views. But it's, to me, I agree with you, Libby, it's a local control issue, right? And it's, this story has been reported for about 2 months. But I think what's really driving it right now is the, and I just tweeted it out at T. Bush, what Joe just played. When you compile it all together from stations all over the country, that makes it chilling.
Right.
It is
but
Big
I don't,
Brother.
It is Big it is Brother. Big. And I don't even think the Murdochs would do something like this. Because this is not Fox. This is Sinclair. You don't see this kind of stuff at Fox stations. Yes, they're more, I mean, Fox and Friends, and nationally, the national cable station is
But that
very,
doesn't
very
come
big.
Down to the Fox
But it
affiliate.
Doesn't come down to the affiliate. It no. doesn't well, come down like this.
No. Well, I have to say, when you look at the video, it is Fox affiliates, it's CBS affiliates, it's NBC affiliates, right. it's ABC affiliates. It's dealing with everybody right. who would have a Sinclair owned station.
Right, but right. you don't have the Murdochs saying...
And they're
maybe,
just
that's
cause
he's
this,
maybe that's because he's they're smarter.
Smarter. He
but
is.
There is
smarter.
There are
this
common
this really
themes,
has,
but this
right.
is this really.
Yeah, I mean, what I found amazing was, you know, when the Murdochs first took over, and
late.
They
I have to go to a break.
Okay,
break.
Never mind.
Okay,
break.
Let's take a break.
Break.
And when we come back, we'll continue. I promise. Fine. All right, we'll be back right after this. We're playing these great TV themes because Stephen Bochco passed away at the age of 74. We got a couple of letters from people saying we're making it sound like the guy who wrote the themes, Mike Post, died.
No.
Mike Post didn't die, but Mike Post did do most of the themes
yes,
for
did.
Stephen Bochco. So,
you just know everything.
No, I was just reading a
no,
letter.
No, he does.
It's called Google.
He does know. No.
It's called cheating.
No, you're right.
See, that's a problem with Google now because there is no such thing as a good bar bet anymore.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You used to be able to win those, but now you can't because everybody can Google them.
Right. All you have to do is say, yes, I do. I know everything.
Well,
no, he doesn't know.
Well, because when you go in your class and you say to them, hey, does anybody know this? And then like 4 seconds later, a kid will say, oh, well, this is. And I said, do you know that? Or are you just, he goes, yeah, I just looked it up. Yeah.
Yeah. Or when I went into a class all those years ago, David Gustina's class, and they said, I said, well, now when I did my interview with Pete Seeger, and they all looked out of it, and I said, wait, does anybody know who Pete Seeger was? Not one hand goes up. So timidly one hand goes up and said, is that Mike Seeger's brother? Oh, no, is that Bob Seeger. Seeger's brother?
Bob Seeger's brother. Although I would submit that probably 95% of my class would know Bob Seeger at this point.
Would know?
Would not.
No, yeah.
My class didn't know who James Comey was. So.
There was. By the way, this you're going to think this speaks bad of the institutions that we represent, but really it doesn't. We're working on it. But one kid out of 25 knew that Mike Pence was the vice president of the United States.
Yeah. See, well, ask him today when you go in. Say, okay, class. Who's the lieutenant governor of New York?
No, well...
See, my kids now, because I'm at Rockefeller, they know.
Well, so now
it was
every...
when I was doing undergraduates.
So now in every quiz that I give, the last question is who's the vice president of the
United
States?
And is it a bonus point, or is it actually part of the quiz?
Yeah, you know what? I'll give them whatever they can get. Until everyone gets it right, I'm still going to keep trying it.
Journalism students could not tell you who the vice president of the United States of America.
To be fair, they're not all journalism students. It was an intro to mass comm class. So you get from all
communications.
Yes, you get all backgrounds.
Yeah,
Alan has letters. Go ahead, Alan.
Not many, but I have a couple here, and this is from Greg, who says these were the equivalent of hostage statements. He's talking about Sinclair. I'm hoping someone organizes a day of outrage at local Sinclair stations and lets their sponsors know. Think that's going to happen, gang? I do not. All right.
Can I read a letter?
Of course, Joe.
I'm gonna. All right, we just got this from Sue, and I think it's a good letter to get us mad. Sue writes and says, Liz Bishop may be your friend, but it's absolutely chilling that our local news could be scripted by an organization that promotes a Trumpian agenda or any non-news agenda. I'm surprised that Roundtable did not take a stronger stand against this, especially such a blatant attempt to brand factual information as fake news. Please don't soft soap any attack on the freedom of the press, which is exactly what Sinclair is doing.
Let me take the opposite view. We have raised it. We are outraged about it. We have made that clear. Where are you coming from, Mars?
But I think we love Liz, and I think it's but I do think as we look at it as you know, we put ourselves in that shoe. If somebody comes in and they can do something and they say, you got to read this, I don't know what you do.
By the way, I'm outraged at that letter. Outraged.
That's partially why
I'm outraged.
It's partially why I read it. Go ahead.
Reed says 18 midterms messaging. 18 inches?
The 2018 midterms.
Okay, there's an 18, and then it has that little like
2018
a foot thing.
Oh, yeah. The little beep, beep.
Yeah.
It should be on before the one.
Yeah, I would think. Good morning, panel. The Democrats need to come to a consensus on the message they will use in the midterms to differentiate themselves from conservatives. N-O-W capital. The one issue that all candidates should adopt is fighting corruption, period. This can resonate with any electorate if communicated correctly. I agree with Reid, and I think that occurs both in the Democratic Party and in the Republican Party. Look at what's going on in state government right now, for God's sakes.
Well, democracy is really on the ballot. Mm-hmm. Do you believe in the basic tenets of our democracy? You know, that's what's really on the ballot.
Yeah, gerrymander so only you can win. Right. So that's bad, right?
Yep.
Do you believe in voting rights? Do you believe in the First Amendment?
What they're trying to do with the census is gerrymandering so that the Republicans win for generations to come.
Sure. And they're going to get away with it.
That's what's on the ballot. Basic tenets of our democracy.
And then I want to talk about the New York State budget because you just mentioned it, but go ahead.
Jamie says, news story about news. I'm having a hard time seeing what you're objecting to. Is it that Sinclair owns so many stations or the content of the statement? We have to avoid journalists objecting to stories because they make them feel funny. Make objective statements based on facts. Was not that the gist of the statement? As for myself, unlike public radio stations, too much consolidation does us all a disservice. Thank you for your letter. We love your letters.
I don't really get it, though. Am I?
No, he was attacking us.
Well, I got that part, but I didn't understand.
I know his work.
I think this will be confusing to some people because certainly MSNBC has a perspective and people would say NPR has a perspective and CNN and Fox and each has different perspectives. And they'll say, well, just because Sinclair has a different perspective than you, why does that matter? Why is what MSNBC does different from what Sinclair? And I think there is a very important difference because when these stations are not allowed to make their own local editorial judgments, that they are forced to read these common statements, you know, forced to cover certain things. The viewers need to be aware of that.
So says John, the Sinclair broadcasting situation is so disturbing. Do you think we might ever see a pushback via return of legislation like the Fairness Doctrine? And that's from John in Norfolk.
Probably not.
I don't think the Fairness Doctrine would affect that, would it?
Well, let me put it this way. I think the Fairness Doctrine had a lot of problems. And I think a lot of journalists, good journalists, had problems with it. Because what happens is there always has to be the other side. The other side always has to be played. And sometimes there really isn't another side or a good other side. Mm-hmm. So I had real problems with the Fairness Doctrine.
Now, this is mixing a little apples and oranges, but certainly as it relates to social media, Facebook and others and advertising there, you're going to need to see some changes in those areas. It's some little
apples
and oranges.
I suppose. Anyway, from Bruce Hee, we can extend benefit of doubt once. Giving local Sinclair anchors the benefit of the doubt is too generous. What will they do going forward? Small pebbles add up to an avalanche. Why didn't the German citizens say no? Calling legit news fake is pure propaganda. The anchors didn't know what they were doing. I call BS. I love that. That's a new thing I've learned around here. Somebody says, I call BS, but they don't say BS. They say what it stands for. I call. I like it.
Yeah.
CNN is investigating reports that some anchors refuse to read along. Great respect for those journalists, and that's from Brucey.
All right.
Okay,
all right. You know, it's just, well.
It's, well, what? It's,
well, I feel, I guess I come at this from that of a, from a broadcaster. And if you, you know, if you're working for a company and this is who's paying your check until you find something else, and I understand the of screaming at the television and saying, why are you saying this and what have you done to me? But I don't know what you're supposed to do.
But you know,
contact
Joe,
advertisers. That's what you do.
But you know, Yad Vashem in Israel, who is honor, who honor the righteous Gentiles, who did extraordinary things at great risk to themselves. Today, a 107-year-old man died.
Right.
You saw the story, everybody.
Yes.
And he had pulled kids from the school, Jewish kids from the school, who were going to die, into his purview and made off with them and made sure that they had lives to live. You know, I mean, there are times when you have to have courage.
Mm-hmm.
And I would love it if some of the Republicans and more Democrats in the Congress had that courage right now.
Find their backbones.
The state budget, a deal was reached over the weekend. They made it as far as the deadline. Lawmakers are poised to finalize the state's $168 billion state budget with a deal that includes a new state tax code as a response to federal changes and more money for education. Governor Andrew Cuomo said, this budget was the most difficult budget I think we've done. But they made it. Cuomo, speaking in the ceremonial Red Room at the Capitol, blamed the difficulty on the state, starting with a potential deficit. He also spent time explaining the impact of the federal tax law changes, quote, gutting deductibility of state and local taxes, and what the state plans to do to counter that, including decoupling from the federal tax code. Charitable contributions would also be expanded. The new $168 billion plan adds $1 billion to the state school spending, bringing the total to $26.7 billion. It also includes $25 million to expand pre-K and after-school programs.
And you forgot to mention that they set up a commission to give themselves a raise. Yes,
right.
And that. Now, Andrew,
they haven't had a raise in how many years?
You're right. They deserve.
Years?
They
yes,
deserve
20.
A raise. Their problem is they're not willing to take the hard steps that they need to get that raise. Andrew Cuomo, to his in his wisdom, said 2 years ago, you know, you can have the raise, but you have to eschew outside income, the potential, because we all know, as Plunkett of Tammany Hall said, there's honest graft and dishonest graft. And the honest graft is, hey, do I want to go to see the senator or do I want to go to see some schlump who's just a regular lawyer around the corner? So the answer is, we all know that this power is being sold. So they ought to do it. They ought to say no outside income and you can have your pay raise. When they were offered that deal the last time, guess what?
They
didn't
no.
take it because they knew exactly where their money was coming in from. So if, in fact, that's the deal, well, you know, too bad on them. So Teresa, I agree with you. They deserve a raise, but when they do the right thing.
I don't know the details. I just think 20 years without a raise for anybody in any job doesn't make sense.
Well, not if you're raking it in on the outside.
But,
and that's what's
know,
happening here.
Yes.
I know
but
we
not
want to talk about
them.
Other stuff.
No,
not all,
not
them.
All of them.
Not
except,
all of them rake it in.
Except, Libby, that the all of them went along with those who were on the dole.
Yes.
And
yes.
So that's the problem.
Yes. Well, I think that...
And that's
I
why
think
they're
the,
responsible.
I think more of them double dip, per se, public-private... then don't. And so yeah. The votes were there to say no to that kind of pay raise.
Yeah.
But there were plenty, there not plenty, but there are members who this is their only income. And, you know, we heard the stories. I remember Michael Benjamin's story. I mean, there were stories about folks who were, you know, this was their only income. And it's not that much money. So, you know, when you think about having to schlep back and forth to Albany, live in New York City. I know, I get that, but still, live in New York City, have a family. You know,
look, people know.
But there's other stuff in the budget.
Yeah, there's
look,
much
yes,
more important
are.
Stuff in
but
the budget.
But I wanted to raise that.
Okay.
Okay, and I'm so sorry, Teresa, if I've offended you by raising that. But I do want to say that the budget is interesting in that, like a bunch of sheep, they put them in a room, they let them get tired, they say you want to go home and see your families on Easter or Passover, and they give in to the most outrageous kinds of blackmail, basically. One of the guys who has literally controlled the Senate is a man named Simcha Felder.
Yes.
And Simcha Felder decided that the Orthodox schools in his district should not follow the same educational requirements that everyone, I believe, including Catholic schools, do in New York State. And they had to give him a little something. They didn't give him everything he wanted, but they had to give him a little something because he was so powerful. And we were supposed to not see any more of the, you know, the, what do they call those things? Where you get something for your district, you get a little extra.
Pork.
Yeah. So for pork, and the thing is loaded with pork.
Was that different from everybody. A Lulu?
A Lulu is a little extra money now. For example, the Lulus are given to people like the traitors, the guy who's a Democrat, the vice chair. Now, vice chairs are not supposed to get the money, but
That's Tom DiNapoli is.
But DiNapoli, the courageous controller of New York, has said nothing doing.
But there are other good things that are in the budget.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. While the entire women's agenda did not make it into the budget, there is now a requirement that public schools provide feminine hygiene products.
In
restrooms for students 6 through 12, okay, which is something New York City schools have done since 2016. And that's really very important. It really is.
It's amazing.
Incredibly important. I remember when last year it was about providing feminine hygiene products in prisons for free because before the women had to use their commissary to get it. So this is an incredibly important thing. It doesn't remove the stigma. It never, you know, but at least it's giving young women access to what they need when they have their periods. And so there's that. There's things around sexual harassment. Some people thought it was well done. Some people think it wasn't done well enough. I think it's probably the beginning. The Uniform Building Code will require all new or substantially renovated buildings with public restrooms to offer baby changing tables in both men's and women's bathrooms. It's these quality of life issues that people don't think about, but when you have a kid and you have no place to change them, it really does make a difference. And I can tell you that there are stories that I hear about people changing a baby on the back steps of a library because they have no place else to go. So,
and also, there are many things that aren't in that budget.
Yes.
For example, the look-back provision, since you are, and I know you are, I say this in the best sense, a dedicated feminist.
Yes,
the
look-back
provision, which is if you had been abused. You could sue years later.
Right.
And the cardinal came in and he said, nothing doing.
Right, and the Republicans in the Senate capitulated.
And they said, okay.
Right. They did capitulate. I have to say, though, that...
We're just about out of time. Go ahead.
Okay. There is my $5 million in the budget that I worked for the Companion Animal Capital Fund to continue capital projects at animal shelters across the state, which is a good thing. It's a small... somebody called it a rounding error, and I said, I'll take that. But it's
you
a small thing.
Robbie, Libby, and you're on this program?
Yeah. Ray says it all the time.
I see.
All right, we're out of time. This seems like a fine time to end this discussion. Libby Post, Teresa Bourgeois, Alan Chartok, thank you all very much for being with us. We always welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be back right after this.